Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard. I'm here again with Josh Olswich. Hey, Josh.
Brian, again, I have to say it every time. The ease and accuracy at which you say my last name is utterly impressive.
Well, thank you.
I get it wrong a lot of times. Anyway,
I run into that where I have a hard time pronouncing my name on bad days. When I'm in a mental bad place, sometimes Krogsgaard is tough to pronounce as well. So, hey, man, guess what? We are retesting the magical 6,400 price that haunted all of our 2018. We are back there from the downside, and the question is, what now? I mean, you and I are pretty well documented from a month ago saying that we felt like we moved pretty quick and deserved to retrace a tidbit, and every time we retraced, it just got balled up before it even really got to our drawdown targets, and now all of a sudden, here we are. So it's been a busy few weeks from a price perspective and also from a news perspective, so we're going to cover all of that. Would you rather start with news or price today?
Let's start with news because I feel like that's going to be quicker.
Sounds good. Well, we've got a couple of hacks on deck to talk about, I guess. So why don't we start
just
with
one, right? Just Binance.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I mean, that
feels like more than one.
I mean, Bitfinex just can't stay out of the news. It's funny, like they're in the news like every other week regarding something. Most of it's completely ludicrous. But the people who are silent about them the most is them. Like, they refuse essentially to have any sort of PR surrounding anything, which is a big part of their problem. And it's gotten to the point where I'm sick of talking about it. I'm sick of hearing about it. I'm sick of trying to defend them. Like, I work there. Like, I don't care if they're gone tomorrow. Like, I don't care. But just, it's hard to sit back and see some of the things that are like said or like speculated about without wanting to just say that's obviously wrong based on what I know. And, you know, what we're privileged from the perspective that we're able to interact with a lot of people who are deep in this market, including the people at Bitfinex. So certain things that we hear aren't necessarily public and just can't be public or whatever, for whatever reason. So that's just, it's just like really, really upsetting for me.
I
wrote a blog post about Bitfinex last week, 2 weeks ago. I forget at this point, but it was the day before Stu Hoogner. I don't know how to say his name. It was the day before he put out a affidavit based on his knowledge of what was going on and whatever. I mean, what he said in the affidavit was strikingly similar to what I laid out in my blog post. Not to pat my own back or anything, but
that was probably what caused it.
No, it definitely wasn't. But it was just like this is what I know from my perspective, and that's what he knows from his perspective, and it matched. So being like Tether's always been redeemable. They've had banking problems. Yes. The major wrongdoing Bitfinex perspective is that they suddenly are fractionally reserving things without necessarily.
Well, yeah, let's dig into that component.
Explicitly laying out to the public what that's about.
Yeah, so this all goes back. We know this has been happening for a while because
Your take on that?
Yeah, they had the terms of service changes that were obviously a foreshadow to this news. So they wanted to get away with loaning themselves Tether reserves, and they didn't get away with it. So therefore, it all had to come forefront a bit. But the thing that I don't like is not that Tether is backed now by both U.S. dollars and essentially
shares
other investments. Yeah, shares of companies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To me, the problem is that if they weren't the managing company behind both organizations, then they would never loan that money to Bitfinex if it was unrelated. So obviously they're not doing anything in the best interests of Tether holders. They're doing it in the best interests of management of Tether because they're also management of Bitfinex. And the lack of liquidity in those shares is very problematic. And now they're trying to get out of it with this IEO, which is just a brazen money raise in order to essentially, I guess they'll use it to refund Tether in some way. But all of that to me is just like very dangerous activity and threatens Tether, whereas previously it was Bitfinex that was threatened. And obviously to them, when they're making this calculation of do we keep Tether going and put Bitfinex at risk, or do we put both of them at risk? And they put both of them at risk. And by putting both of them at risk, they put the entire Bitcoin market at risk in some way. So, yeah, I agree with you. It's frustrating. I think they're frustrating. I don't think it kills Bitcoin in any way. It just is more FUD to deal with because it to me, it doesn't affect Bitcoin. It affects a business. If anything, it makes Bitcoin stronger if you're looking at it in a logical way, which not everyone does. But this gives you less reason to hold less reason to hold Tether, more reason to just hold Bitcoin outright, don't you think?
Yeah, and I mean, there's so much ancillary fallout and like conflicts of interest between all of this stuff. Clearly, the C-suite being the same for Bitfinex and Tether is a massive conflict of interest. Yeah. I don't even care if they got separate counsel for the deal based on Stu's affidavit. That's what he said, but like, I don't care. Like you said, it's in their best interest to make both companies survive somehow. And you know, if we rewind the tape to all of this, it started with them not having a contract supposedly with Crypto Capital, which wasn't mentioned.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. Which, which wasn't mentioned in Stu's affidavit, oddly enough. Or maybe it was, and I missed it and don't remember, but, either they didn't have a contract, don't have a contract, never did have a contract, or they have one. And it's just so egregious that they just chose to lie about it. I don't even know like what to think about that. So that's like, that's the main stem problem from all this. And then the other part of it is Crypto Capital just being a super shady, seemingly, allegedly, whatever word you want to put on that verb, adjective, company that just kind of is in risky stuff. You know, they do a lot of loose KYC AML type stuff around the world for a lot of different entities. So yeah, I mean, they got nabbed by law enforcement supposedly, and all of Bitfinex's funds at Crypto Capital got nabbed with that. So do they have a shot at getting them back eventually? Yeah, of course they do, but who knows when, who knows how much, you know?
Yeah, there's definitely inherent
that's kind of like baseline.
A lot of inherent risks there, and it makes sense why the Bitcoin premium went up on Bitfinex at its height, what, 6 or 7%? And now, as of our time of recording, almost 1%. It's retraced back. So the market is starting to shrug this off.
Interestingly, as soon as the LEO stuff was finalized and they sold everything for the LEO, so the LEO is $1 billion. As soon as it was public,
the IEO of LEO.
Correct. Yeah. Bitfinex's IEO called LEO. As soon as it was public that it was sold out, the premium began to fall. So if that's a coincidence, I don't know. I know for like arbing that takes some time. It takes like a week, I think, just in general. Yeah. And there aren't too many people on the American side, at least, who can do that arb. A lot of international people can, because they're connected with Binance and Bitfinex, or Bitfinex and whoever else.
But Binance made it hard to arb anything either recently.
Just trying to think if there's anything else I want to say about Tether. I mean, so with the letter, when the New York AG letter hit, I immediately was like, all right, I'm all in coin, let's do it. I think that's the natural play for everybody. Like you said earlier too, you were alluding to it, you know, if the safe haven's not safe temporarily, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to buy a crypto, or you're going to try to redeem
Tether if you can.
Yeah, I mean, that's what people did. We saw a mass exodus out of Tether. They just burned $74 million today, the biggest burn they've ever had. Wow. And that was from people over the course of the past 2 weeks redeeming Tether for USD, which is what they need to do. I tell everybody, you know, if you're not happy with something, the only thing that's going to work is with your money, you know, redeem Tether, get out of Bifinex, bank run, whatever you want to call it, you know, just that's how they're going to listen. You know,
I was mad at myself because I saw the news quick enough. Tether was over a dollar, like 1.01 almost, something, you know, something just over a dollar. And I was there and I even made a comment in a Telegram group and was like, you can 2x Tether on Kraken USDT versus USD. And it would have been such an easy short. And I just was like, ah, and I didn't bother with it. And it went as low as a little under 96 cents. So it would have been, 4% times about 8% on the trade, mm-hmm. in like a day. So I missed out on that trade opportunity on what was basically a risk-free trade opportunity because Tether wasn't going to go up. So that was a mistake, but good play on you and turning that into Bitcoin. I was worried about the risk of it affecting Bitcoin, even though it shouldn't, because I've seen that happen before too, where stuff goes down, even though it's the logical thing to do. And even in this situation, we did have a down day basically. Right. But then it recovered pretty quickly. So yeah, it's a tricky situation. And then, the other thing that's that been brought the
theme,
in,
by the way,
tricky situation.
We had some bad news in a down day, but it recovered quickly. Like that's the TLDR for the past 2 weeks.
Let's move over to Binance, which is we can keep it pretty straightforward, but let's talk about how it affected price. Basically, Binance had hacked, and it seems a little fuzzy in terms of if they know the specifics of how they got hacked. So they
know the specifics. Let's be real.
But they're not necessarily sharing all the specifics yet, but they're making...
It might not be public, but...
Yeah.
We all know what happened.
They're making broad sweeping changes, revoking all API keys, which is a huge pain for anyone that uses the API, even if it's just for tracking. And they stopped all withdrawals. But 7,000 Bitcoin was worth about $40 million. And what amazes me is that wasn't flagged somehow, so the attack vector must have gotten past quite a few what should have been security areas. It tells me that someone was KYC'd that requested the withdrawal to have been able to make that type of withdrawal. So like there's all sorts of speculation, but nevertheless it didn't really affect price at all, maybe for a matter of like a couple hours in a small way. And then we just started grinding on up. And the premium on Binance, I think, has gone up too, right? Yeah, it's up there along the same lines as where Bitfinex's premium is.
They've closed withdrawals and deposits, so they're kind of like irrelevant right now, in my opinion. Like their price can do anything.
Yeah. So do you have any thoughts on Binance, or just that in another exchange hack, you feel justified? You were the one that never trusted Binance in the first place.
Yeah, I don't, but that isn't really, like, it's more nuanced than that, even though I don't trade there anyway. So in July 2018, there was a similar hack to Syscoin, if you check that chart from July 2018.
Somebody sold Syscoin for 96 BTC.
Yeah, at that time they were they were moving around some cold wallets or something, I don't know. And like something slipped through the cracks at that time. I think it was 7,000 BTC as well. So there's that. So that tells me, okay, they had an issue before. How did that happen? Clearly they didn't mitigate that risk completely for the future. Was it an inside job at that time? Could have been, most likely. The hack in air quotes that happened recently is strikingly similar to that. You know, even though there was this blog post that this guy like bought, what was it? Link. It was on a Link Packs chart.
Yeah.
So There's this blog post claiming this guy lost like $400,000 or something. I don't remember what it was because it got deleted at this point, but I don't think that was correct. I think it was partially an inside job, partially phishing, partially addresses not being flagged for withdrawal through like SegWit or something. There's some like hang up there with SegWit addresses, I think, which is why it like slipped through their cracks.
When you say partially an inside job, you don't necessarily mean from the top, but you mean somebody with access.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Could have for been sure. involved.
Somebody knew something. Yeah. Big time. And that's why they're like burning down their entire system and rebuilding it from scratch. You know, like they're resetting all the API keys. They're halting deposits withdrawals. Like they're just rebuilding. And the other part of that Syscoin or Link Pax chart is that what you do to make it more efficient is you can, to make the hack more efficient, you can set high asks on other exchanges so that when price follows temporarily from the Binance chart, you'll also get filled there. Nobody really knows that was you. You know, that was just an order on the book. You know, that's basically impossible to tell. Who that, you know, people put orders places all the time, right?
Yeah, and so if it goes up like 1,000% on one, you get the benefit of it going up 100% on the other one.
Right. And I haven't checked this like market wide. It was on a really weird chart. And that's the other thing. Like Link Pax is probably a low liquidity chart and they cleared the book very quickly and they set asks on somebody's account and through an API. And they withdrew through API, whatever it was, you know, this was all very feasible to be done in that route. Part of this is you can short BTC or whatever coin you hack. Once the news breaks, you're expecting that price to drop. So there's kind of like three ways you can make money from that, the hack, which is pretty interesting. Just the hacked coins, the chart you're trying to mess with, and then shorting the hacked coins.
If I would have told you 6 months ago or 6 weeks ago, hey, we're going to have major Tether news, Bitfinex will feel justified in his craziness, not that he should still, and then also that Binance will be hacked, now go tell me what the chart looks like, would you have guessed that it looks like just a few weekly candles of just near euphoria? Or would you have thought we would have had some down movement off of that?
Yeah, that's probably the oddest part about it, all of it, because before we broke 6,200 to the downside, we had Tether news that was very similar, but that was all over it within a day. You know, if you look at the Bitfinex chart, it hit like $8,000 or something ridiculous on one day, and that was all due to Tether exodus because people were de-risking or afraid that Tether was going to go to zero at that time. So we had a very similar thing here, except it was kind of market wide because of the AG report. I think a lot of people were super concerned. And yeah, the whole like Bitfinex thing, you know, his whole thing was always they don't have the money in reserves. The other part of it was like, oh, it's all used for money laundering, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I mean, like, you could say this stuff all you want, but they clearly had the money. And yeah, they messed up big time by going to a fractional reserve. And like you said, that was foreshadowed in their terms of service changes in March 14th-ish. Even though they were discussing this before. I just didn't like how they didn't tell anybody about it, basically. I mean, I can give you the benefit of the doubt. I can see that withdrawals are working. But at the moment you do something like this, it's like, all right, trust is gone. The little trust I had for them is no longer there for sure.
Well, the very the premise of what they were trying to do requires that people don't know about it. Because if people know about it, they're going to withdraw both from the exchange because they fear that the exchange won't be able to sufficiently provide withdrawals because their money's gone. And from Tether, once Tether decides to make the loan, because they would know that the market would no longer trust Tether as a dollar-for-dollar backed reserve. Now it's a dollar plus random venture capital in very risky crypto exchanges reserve coin.
It's an unaudited risk of a fractional reserve of yourself.
So yeah,
it is definitely makes me uneasy, you know.
Yeah, and the reason they don't have the cash is because the United States government seized it from one of their partners who's very sketchy, and then the United States government so the government was on two sides of it, which was particularly annoying if you're in Bitfinex, because you're like, you're getting mad at me because I did this, but the reason I did this is because you took our partner's money. But it's like, well, they were probably money laundering it, so like the government's not going to feel bad for Bitfinex, but it's getting the summons from the New York Attorney General's office was probably frustrating for Bitfinex.
So crypto capital was laundering for somebody, either narco trafficking.
Assumedly.
Yeah, whatever, allegedly. Narco trafficking allegedly. Or like, what is it called? Human trafficking, you know, all just the most worst
something
shit
terrible.
You can imagine.
Yeah.
So it is what it is for them. Clearly, they're going to get the book thrown at them. But, you know, Bitfinex might have been collateral damage as part of that. And here I am again, like, defending Bitfinex.
I'm not trying to defend him. I'm just, I've been trying to understand where they come from, and I can see how they got into this position, but I think it's silly to try to say it's not a bad position. Like,
yeah. It was the cover up, you know, like you've alluded to already.
Well, the act would have been bad as well. Now they're just trying to work their way out of it with this IEO crap.
Right, but if people knew about it ahead of time or before it happened, as it happened, whatever, like then they would have the opportunity to say, you know what, I don't think the shares in Bitfinex are good enough to keep this fractional reserve, you know, so I'm going to sell my Tether or not use Tether or whatever. Yes, I think it's a poor business decision. It's got risks, blah, blah, blah. But doing that and then not telling anybody is disappointing, you know, and them turning around and saying, the service changed, so everyone was notified. It's like, well, not exactly, you know.
Yeah.
Like if your transparency report said iFinex shares as part of the reserves, then I would say, okay, you're being super transparent about it. But clearly that isn't the case, you know. Even today, you know, if you go to the transparency report, it's not listed on their site. So anyway, and again, this is just me ranting about Tether, even though I can't stand talking about it.
Yeah, I'm going to finish one more thought on that. You can leave it hanging if you want. But I'm pretty sure that this now puts Tether well in the realm of being a security. They probably were already, but now they're...
They are.
Yeah. Now that I don't understand how they couldn't be. So there's that. Don't know what...
But that's the next thing coming, right? Because like... That's
U.S. exchanges won't be able to use it.
Well, it'll be Americans can't use Tether or something ridiculous, you know? So exchanges will have to do a tap dance around, like, changing market structure, disallowing USDT pairs, blah, 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 you know, all this other stuff. You know, is USDC a security? Probably, if USDT is, right? I mean, I don't know. They could do all sorts of things. So it can definitely get messy from that perspective.
Well, Brad Sherman would certainly take all of this information listening to this and say, you know what, we should just make cryptocurrencies illegal, because he said that anyways. I don't even know what this hearing was in, but my least favorite congressman, because he's such a dweeb.
I just love how it blew up. Like,
yeah,
that video just went viral very quickly.
As Coin Center said, it's as good a reason as any for why we need cryptocurrencies. But he wants to make Bitcoin and all cryptocurrencies illegal. I don't even really know what his justification was, other than he's probably in the back pocket of some interests that don't like Bitcoin. But
I was looking at – so he's part of the 30th District of California House of Representatives. And I was looking at his actual district, who his constituents were. And he's like a little north of LA, like northwest of LA, very south of SF, kind of by like Santa Clarita I don't know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, just like looking like who the hell would be over there like lobbying against cryptocurrencies. And, you know, if there's no SF senator or House representative who would bill into Congress just because of the Silicon Valley and Coinbase and whoever else, you know, lobbying towards against that. So yeah, I don't know. It's just interesting. It's really weird.
Did you have any other take on him?
Like that's even a topic.
Yeah, I don't think it needs to be necessarily.
No, it's, I mean, he could try. It was a great advertisement for crypto for sure. And, you know, maybe it's helping this rally now. I don't know. Because since then, when was that? Yesterday or 2 days ago? I feel like we've gone up like $200 or $300 since he said that. So I don't know. But yeah, no, it's funny. I don't think it'll ever pass. There's no chance.
Yeah, he is on a subcommittee that has to do with monetary policy and another mm-hmm. one on investor protections and capital markets. So I think that's actually how he was one of the people that made a fool of themselves back when they were interviewing the CFTC guy and the SEC chairman or something, and they were talking about crypto. This isn't his first rodeo being an idiot or acting this way towards cryptocurrencies. Whether someone else wants to call him an idiot is up to them. But I think any reason he has to have this positioning probably has more to do with committee appointments than location. But let's move into other news. You have a list over there.
The last thing is consensus is this week.
Oh, yeah.
Magical Crypto Conference is this weekend. So I'll be leaving today, actually.
You're doing a panel on the Magical CryptoCon?
Yeah, I'm on the exchange panel. So if you have any pressing questions to ask Bitstamp, Kraken, Phil Potter, or this new exchange, BTSE, just let me know.
I'm sure you will handle it gracefully.
We'll see. Yeah.
Nice. Well, last year we had a lot of Hopium going into consensus. It was a very busy conference, and there were apparently a lot of ICOs and suits and everything else, and then we dumped directly out of it, maybe while we were there. I don't really remember. So we're pumping into consensus. Do you think this is a sell the event, or does it matter? Is there any correlation?
It's funny because the last time I saw you, we had the denial of the Winklevi ETF,
mm-hmm.
and that was the local top at that time. And I kind of brushed that off as non-news, considering they were denied a second time, and the way it was set up didn't make any sense, and blah, blah, blah. But for whatever reason, we reversed at that point. And it'll be interesting, certainly, if we pull back the week of consensus, blockchain week in New York, whatever.
Do you think blockchain week and consensus and all that, it's a particularly relevant thing for price, or is it just all the people trying to either build or otherwise make money off this ecosystem where they go to collect, and it's not really where you have your market movers? I mean, the retail is not going to be there.
No, retail won't be there, but like the marketing campaigns are all kind of leading into consensus, like the drop gold DCG thing was clearly timed with consensus. Consensus this year is likely going to all be about custody, finance, blah, 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 finance. that's going to be like the number one thing. They're the biggest exchanges in the world. They're unregulated. They don't have, you know, they do their own custody, whatever. So yeah, everybody's just going to take pot shots at Binance just because it's, you know, the most topical thing. But there are, you know, consensus does bring people together, or blockchain week, whatever, does bring people together from all over the world to discuss a lot of crypto stuff. So from that aspect, it's really good for the community, just crypto in general. The conference is kind of a nothing burger, but just the fact that there's networking and everybody's together, that's the most bullish thing.
Yeah. And I think if I was going, I would want to go to the Magical Crypto Conference to see your panel, of course.
Well, they're actually, you know, most of the time I go to these conferences and I'm just like super bored, falling asleep in the audience. And at least for this one, like Honey Badger, like there are a few of these that are actually like very Bitcoin oriented and very like technical oriented and not trying to sell you something, not giving you some ICO pitch. It's a bunch of bullshit for like 10 to 30 minutes, whatever. Mm-hmm. That's just like, it's nauseating. It's uncomfortable. It's difficult to sit through. The other panels usually get are like people from the legacy markets who are like crapping all over crypto and like, we tamed this market in December, blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, whatever, dude. Like, where were you for the past 10 years already at this point? Anyway, yeah. So there's like, most of the time, the conferences are just a joke, but hopefully this one, based on the panels and the talks and whatever, are going to be halfway decent. So we'll see. I'll have to do a post unpacking when I get back.
Yeah, I want to hear about it. So why don't we talk a little bit about price? Because, I mean, 6,400, this was the big breakdown. We had two straight weeks of death when this finally broke at the end of, in the fall of 2018, after the lowest volatility in history, maybe, for like 6 months that it worked up to that. So when we broke down it, it was just gigantic. And I think it's safe to say that there's certainly a degree of disbelief that's been going on really since below 5,000, like in the high 4Ks. And Bitcoin's just been grinding up anyway.
Yeah.
And now we find ourselves, it's not much of a pattern per se. Like, I don't personally see a pattern here other than like just a walk up. It's coming on a form of parabola, maybe, but it's not like I'm seeing a clear rising wedge or an ascending triangle or anything like that. It's just, just keeps walking up, just refuses to have big dips. And all of a sudden we're back at that point of control. It looks pretty exhausted, but at the same time, like, you know, funding on derivatives exchanges is all favoring longs, meaning people are being paid to be long. Bitfinex is highly skewed towards shorts. Don't know what degree the ARB or the premium was playing into that. But it's basically, sentiment-wise, seems a perfect setup to just keep busting right through this 6,400 zone. But it's kind of scary to think, like, you know what, I'm gonna go long right here at this massive point of resistance. So what are you looking at?
Yes, so I got mainly out at 6K, 6K or higher, not like now, but when I got out, I was thinking to myself, if I get out here, where am I going to get back in if this doesn't dip? Like, that was, I thought about that. I slept on it. I said, all right, you know, this is it. I'm just going to pull the trigger, take profit, because I've been in since the Tether stuff, like all in since the Tether stuff.
Which was like 5,400 or so, 5,600.
Yeah, I can check, but I don't really remember, to be honest. But
yeah, so you pulled a 10% swing or so off of that move alone.
Yeah, so I took that and ran with it. Whatever. Yeah, so the levels we're looking at, weekly key June's at 6,550, I think.
Mm-hmm. Just above this little point of control, which is what I'm calling 6,400.
Yeah, so point of control is in like a high volume area, a volume node, volume congestion, previous support, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, all that stuff. I mean, the probability of us blowing past this is slim to none, just in a vacuum. But like you said, if you look at sentiment in the market overall, everybody is net short based on OI, open interest, and the people propping up this market right now are cash buyers on Bitstamp and Coinbase and wherever else. You know, like the premium went from 6 to 1% on Bitfinex, so it's clearly not Bitfinex leading this. There's been buying on Bitstamp, buying, you know, all the cash markets are pushing this up. Futures are still in backwardation. The curve on options isn't, I don't know the terms for options,
it's in backwardation, whatever. So yeah, like none of this points to exhaustion based on a like structure perspective outside of technicals on the price, you know?
Yeah. But if you look at the price action, it looks like it just is begging to fall.
It does. There are bear divs. There have been bear divs. The daily bear div broke yesterday. There's a div on this if you div it back to like 53. But yeah, like you said, there's not really any patterns other than like parabolas, which get exhausted quickly. You know, like those will fall. Like if we have a 1,000+ down day, that would not be surprising to me at all. But when that happens for me, like I need to be ready to buy that, you know, because that's what I've been waiting for.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like I'm saying a bunch of nothing, but like I don't want to short this because I feel like it could just run away from you, you know? Everybody's short right now based on open interest.
I've got one for you. Mm-hmm. For one, I agree with you. All the divs got blown out. There was a daily div and a 3-day and weekly never built in the first place. So to me, that alone says there's probably room in this market still. The next thing I would say is I got a random 3-day chart. If you throw the 200 SMA on there, that's basically what we broke down from at 6,400 last time. Mm-hmm. And because of the way these moving averages work, that continued to move up after that. And now the 3-day 200 is at like 7,100. One of these random indicators is going to tell us exactly where the top is. And we'll be like, oh yeah, it was obvious. Didn't you see the 3-day 200?
So the 600 daily moving average?
Yeah. Right? So, yeah, okay. This is 600 day, which obviously this is silly. But the reason I pointed that one is because it broke down from there. But the other reason is every single person I've seen take on a trade, a short trade, they're like, okay, well, I'm going to stop out between like 6,600 and 6,800 and become full bull. Some people like Vinny Lingam are full bull now at 6,200, which is on the lower side of this extreme resistance level, which I don't understand. But nevertheless, like, most people, a lot of the people that I'm seeing taking shorts, they're taking this very logical short, 63 to 6,400, and they've got stops at places that seem so clear to me to be a stop and like to be trappish. It's hard for me to trade this other than just saying I'm going to hold spot. Like I'm not trying to short. I'm not really trying to margin long Bitcoin. But I actually think that there's a decent chance that we touch 7K or higher before we retrace, and then retrace on like a weekly. So like if you look on a weekly chart or something, maybe we will have a wick above 6,400. And indeed at like a year from now, it just looks like it was the top end of the range, not some major fake out. But I think something like that would be what it takes to shift sentiment, because right now it just seems like sentiment is too bearish for it to be right. And I feel like there's a good chance to just like bust everyone's stops further on the way up before we have a determined move down. And when I say down, I see 5150 as a big weekly level now, because we held that for like 4 weeks in a row, either on the open or the close. And I think our range is probably like this 5 to 6K range, which is a little higher than I anticipated us accumulating and having a longer term range in. But I think that's the likelihood. I just think we might just melt up first and have a little bit of a miniature blow off top.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly possible. That's possible based on the shorts. We could definitely have a short squeeze still. There's an argument to be made on whether this is people hedging or whatever, but you know, it's people have been short ever since 48. So shorts have been rising, I'm pretty sure, ever since then. So yeah, that's definitely possible. I do agree. Anything below 5150 is a buy, and anything below 5K is like load the boat. Because at this point, the risk reward from 0 to 5K versus 5K to infinity, you know, I'll take that trade. Like if you're bullish on crypto,
Then 5K sounds good now.
Yeah, that's the two. The daily 200 is at 48. So that's a litmus test. You know, we either pause there before we go down lower or we bounce from that level. The daily ketones at 51.30 and rising.
I want to say, Josh, you gotta love sentiment. People were giving us a hard time for being bullish from, 4K when we were talking mm-hmm. about that breach of the Bollinger Band Weekly. People were giving us a hard time back then, and now like everyone else has flipped bullish and are flipped bearish, and we're just kind of like, eh.
I got so much hate before we broke 4K on Twitter, just and bullish. YouTube, and being bullish. So much hate, and now it's like, you know, whatever. I don't care either way, but it's just super funny. This is obviously, as soon as we broke the 200, the bull trend is back, you know, from a litmus test perspective.
And now my thing is, I don't know where to say, like, oh yeah, you know what, I'm so confident that this will break through and stay. I don't really have that feeling, but yeah, I'm just
too long up here for sure.
Yeah, but I'm also not. I'd rather wait for it to break down rather than try to like get out of crypto in anticipation. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I still think because of the sentiment, there's upside here, and I don't know what that upside will be. Like, I mean, you saw what happened. Everyone was shorting the top of the 4K range, and we went up $1,200 in like a day and a half or something. So if we do that again, I don't want to be the guy.
For me, that was different, just because it was like a multi-month pattern. Open interest was at record high, like all-time high. I don't know. It was a little different. There was like cloud evidence for us to go up there. If you look at like the 3-day cloud, you can say, oh, there's evidence to go up still. But I'm not a huge fan of like moving up on the clouds and saying, oh, look at all this. We can fit our narrative to whatever. But, you know, if we compare this to like October 2015, where we had this like parabolic rise from 2 to 500. That looks similar to now. We had this like Adam Eve ascending triangle thing, but even there we had, I don't know, the cloud just made more sense to me than it does now. The fact that we breached the cloud and never retraced is just shocking to me.
Yeah.
Like I'm speechless, and speechless that we didn't retrace. We didn't, not only that, but we kind of didn't even test the daily Kijun too much. Like it's just been straight up since that, you know, forget the Kijun.
Yeah, I mean,
but the Tenkan, you know,
we haven't even tested the Tenkan.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I'm getting at.
We kind of did, but yeah.
That's we tested the Tenkan once, but that's kind of what I'm getting at is like, I want to see a little bit of proof that we're not just going to blow through this a little further. Yeah, I don't know.
So, but I'm willing to be patient and say, like, you know what, I'd rather sit this out from here on up and catch it at a more appropriate place that I'm comfortable with longing, you know? So if this wants to go to 10K from here, it might do without me.
That's my big fear is, like, when I talk about a squeeze, like, you never know how big a squeeze can be. It can be nasty.
Yeah, like I said, when I got out at 6K, I was thinking, like, if I get out here, where do I get back in?
Right. Did you say, okay, I'm going to be back in at 6,800 because now it's fully above that old zone? Or do you say, no, I'm waiting until 7.2, I'm waiting until 7.6? What do you do?
I don't know. Like if you look at the daily cloud, 7.2 is the next like ledge on the ledge. Previous cloud.
How long has it been since we talked about cloud ledges? You have to actually go up to do that.
yeah, you do. So there's a case to be made for that level as well, 7,200. But man, if this just keeps going, I'm gonna be upset, disappointed, in disbelief, all those adjectives.
Carpe noctem in disbelief. Hey, there's a we're in the cloud on the 3-day, talking, yeah, about my, talking about my 3-day situation.
Like everybody's yeah. sending this to me, which is great. Like, I love it because that's less analysis I need to do. But it's just like, not because I'm not fully in, but just because, like, I hate moving up the time frames and, like, saying, oh, we're in the 2-day cloud, we're in the 3-day cloud, we're in the 4-day cloud.
You have to choose a time frame that you're going to trade on.
Yeah. I mean, there is a case to be made for the Ethereum on the 3-day cloud just because it's so massive, and alts generally move quicker anyway. So looking at the 3-day ETH chart versus the weekly chart makes more sense to me. But that was another issue on this Bitcoin move, I think, for me. I wasn't on a low enough time frame, which is kind of the opposite of what people most say most of the time. Like, I was too busy looking at 4,800 saying, oh, we're going to retrace to this level, versus looking on, like, the 6-hour or the hourly and saying, I need to be trading these breakouts as they happen. You know, just saying, forget it. This is what it is. Like, after the hack and after they attempted to reorg the chain, we broke out from the hourly cloud April 30th, and there was a decent play there. There was a decent play from May 7th to where we are now. Like, all of that, you'd still be long based on the hourly cloud. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm just on too high of a time frame. Do you want to talk about alts?
I do want to talk about alts. I was just going to say real quick that I agree with you. I do think we're at resistance. I don't want people to get the wrong idea and think I'm, like, majorly bullish here. I just think there's probably a good chance of some more upside, even if I feel like it's really likely that we're going to revisit this area. So I don't think that it's wrong to be out because you're limiting your downside. I just think the sentiment sets us up to squeeze. If there was no such thing as, like, sentiment analysis, I'm purely looking at price action, then I would say I'm basically at the point that I want to get out. But exactly. Because blending sentiment into it, I personally feel that somewhere between, like, 6,800 and 7,200 is more my zone that I think we could get to. And that's enough. That's another 10% plus that, for me, it's worth being around to see that happen. And alts gets to another part of this picture. Alts have gotten freaking crushed relative to Bitcoin.
Yes. You're
actual fist pump, like Tiger Woods on the 18th hole here. So you're excited. Alts died relative to Bitcoin. They've basically been flat for the past month relative to the dollar. So what are you thinking in terms of from here, because that's where this starts to get tricky.
I'm recording, just to let you know.
I know personally, like, I'm not, because of my sentiment on Bitcoin, thinking there's still room to the upside, and I think there's still some buyers. Like, I don't personally think we're just going to rocket back to 5K. I think that does start to give altcoins some strength, especially since I've started to see capitulation on some of these. But what are your thoughts in celebration of alt's death?
Yeah, so as we're now seeing rotation out of alts into BTC, I don't necessarily think we're going to see rotation out of BTC into alts per se. We may see that after we get a massive down candle or something. Like, I don't think we go down on Bitcoin, like, a major correction like that we need to happen. That's what's probably going to happen. I don't think that happens without alts also going down. But maybe it does. I don't know. Generally, Bitcoin leads everything. So to me, Ethereum looks the most bullish based on the fact that it hasn't done anything after its ascending triangle breakout. But I don't expect, like, rotation back into alts to just blow everything up. Things will certainly correct to the upside versus Bitcoin correcting to the downside, but I don't think they're going to all move together or inverse. Like, I don't think it's going to necessarily work like that. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Think there might be some individual performers.
Yeah, so, like, the BTC pair is getting slaughtered now, but the USD pair is going to get slaughtered when the BTC USD pair also pulls back, you know what I mean? So like the BTC pair might stay flat because everything's dying, but the USD pair is going to get slaughtered, I think.
So you're saying the inverse correlation that has come back in that Bitcoin went up, alts went down. You don't think that'll continue if Bitcoin goes down, that money won't flow back into alts. I don't think it will either if it's a large down move. The thing I'm
especially Tether is now quote unquote safe. You know, the FUD and Tether is still there, but the fact that we can use it or USDC or whatever, you know, use whatever you want to use. But I don't know. I just don't think we're going to see money flow back into alts. The other part of it is it's hard to even do that with the liquidity on a lot of these alts. You can't just, you know, throw money here and there without moving the book massive, massive direction.
Yeah.
What were you gonna say?
I was just gonna say I think that I think if Bitcoin finds a lot of buyers while it's consolidating or finding this resistance, meaning that the down moves just aren't as extreme. Mm-hmm. I think that does lend opportunity to alts. I think some of these alts relative to Bitcoin are showing signs of capitulation, but of course, if they repeat what they did in 2018, there's still a lot longer they can go because they can just continuously bleed without retesting anything. Part of the reason that I feel this way is that even though the dollar pairs aren't following Bitcoin all the way, a lot of them are consolidating in a way that is bullish to me, like setting up a flag or a, you know, an ascending triangle or something like that. And to me, if I just look at them isolated and I try not to dig into like what's Bitcoin going to cause, and I just say, hey, what do I see on this chart? A lot like the ETHUSD dollar pair, for instance, looks just like a steady climb to me. Like it just looks pretty good. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that will pull itself off. And even if Bitcoin starts to go sideways or even goes down in a consolidation, like a healthy consolidation, I think there's some opportunity on those altcoins. I just think you got to be careful with them. Like you can't just go in and say, I have no plan for when I'm going to be wrong on this. You know, like I don't think that's a very safe play. But I'll admit, I've started getting long on Ethereum just in the past couple of days. Because the USD chart looks pretty good to me.
Yeah, I agree with all that. Like low or no leverage on USD pairs for alts right now is fine. And I agree that to really like for alts to really shine, Bitcoin it needs to consolidate sideways or, you know, has some minimal retracement. But if it is a massive elevator down, alts will suffer on the USD pair. But the best case for alts is going to be slow profit taking for BTC, you know, just like if BTC builds like a falling wedge, for instance, versus just a massive $1,200 down day, alts will do really well. But the worst case, the worst cases are Bitcoin moving up or down dramatically, you know, for alts.
Yeah, which that continues our long-term thesis that we've shared about really the correlation for alts is to Bitcoin volatility more than it is to up or down.
Yeah. And like XMR looks good.
On the USD pairs.
On the USD pairs. Yeah. Like XMR is basically just above the daily cloud. But all these alts look pretty good on the USD pair for the most part. XLM and ADA don't.
XMR is also above a perfect 5,200.
Cross.
There's a 5,200 cross on XMR on the dollar pair, and I'm not trying to be the guy that's like saying, hey, I'm up in USD or like I see potential there. I'm just, if we're simultaneously saying we don't like the risk reward on BTC and yet there's good USD setups on altcoins, like I wonder if there's a play there. I don't know the answer all the way. Like this is, like I said, this is tricky. It's making money is not easy all the time.
If you're looking at the charts independently in a vacuum, it says go long XMR, go long ETH. But if you take into account Bitcoin and how that's going to affect things, it does get a little
feels more dicey.
Loose, yeah. But I think ETH XMR, even LTC, 3 to 6 months time horizon on the USD pair is going to be fine. I think ETH's going to quickly climb to 200 and then consolidate and then make a decision on 4 to 450 based on the 3-day cloud. But yeah, I mean, it looks good. I don't know. Like, it is what it is. And as far as like other random events coming up, there's a Bitcoin Cash hard fork in May 15th. There's an LTC halving in August. There's an ETH hard fork scheduled for October. That'll probably include the Prague proof of work thing. And then Big Daddy BTC's halvings in May next year. So those are the kind of the big protocol things coming up. Yeah, oh, and Legacy's been booming, which is another huge part of this.
Yeah.
Legacy's kind of booming into all this Bitcoin news, and then Legacy's kind of rolled over the past week, and Bitcoin just keeps going, you know?
Yeah, that's what I found interesting is the correlation really seems to have gone away, or whatever correlation I was trying to curve fit previously. I mean, I guess there's still some, but especially these last few days with the traditional market rolling over a little bit and Bitcoin still going up, it went from seeming like Bitcoin led to the downside on the big correction last year to now Bitcoin, if anything, it seems like it might be lagging the traditional market, which would be confusing to me.
Well, it did lag on that 6,200 like low volatility breakdown. It did lag by about a month. Traditional markets, because traditional markets pulled back almost exactly on October 1st, and then they just went down from there. And then Bitcoin didn't break down until November 13th. So,
yeah, man, I have not looked at this 3-day Ethereum USD cloud setup this talk, and now I'm like, why am I not all in Ethereum? Like, I'm glad I have some positioning here. All of a sudden, I was feeling like it. Like the weird guy out just inching into a Ethereum long, but now I feel like, why am I not all in on this bad boy?
And that's coming from somebody who doesn't even like Ethereum, but just from a technical perspective, it just looks primed as it's ever going to be primed.
You know? I might as well arbitrarily pick a 3-day chart and say, you know what, I'm a 3-day chart maximalist here, because you got a TK cross on the cloud. It's into the cloud and retested off the bottom, so it's inside the cloud. It's over the Bollinger Band midline. There was a 2050 cross, and then the cloud top and the 200, the 200 moving average are both in the same spot, like between 375 and 400. So,
and guess where the weekly key June is on Ethereum.
I'm gonna say it's around 375. 400, 450.
Yeah.
So
if we get that high, which is unlikely based on, so Bitcoin 6,200, like Ethereum's big levels like 350, 360, based on like volume, node volume, congestion, whatever. So I think it's unlikely we're going to blast through, but at this point.
So what you're really saying is 333 ETH by July?
No, don't. How dare you pin that on me?
What I might be willing to own that one. I like
5K by May though. Worked
5K
out.
By May, you nailed 333 by July.
I do think 200 by June pretty easily on ETH.
Oh, that's 200 by June. Come on, that's 20 days from now. I want 200 by like May 15th.
I mean, we can say 350 by July.
No, that's no, okay, no. We gotta go 333
by July. Yeah. That's kind of funny. That's perfect though.
I know.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, let's do it. 333 by July.
333 by July. There we go.
I'm writing it down.
All right, man. Let's leave it there and let's talk soon, all right? You too. Everybody go to twitter.com/CarpeNoctum. Go to BraveNewCoin.com. Read all his stuff.
Monuments crumble in the blink of an eye. The east just run dry in a house of cards. I feel the breeze wound so tight I can barely